Hi, everybody.
Hello, Dave.
Let's see who we have on the call. We have Mac.
Yes, I'm.
So Mac is here. How about Andy?
Yes.
Andy's here? All right. Mindy.
I'm here.
There we go. And Carolyn.
Yes, I'm here.
Good. Jennifer.
Yes, I'm here.
And Deb.
I'm here.
And Ron.
I'm here.
Phyllis.
I'm here.
Jerry.
I'm here.
David.
Present.
Sandy.
Here.
Oliver.
I'm here.
And Amy. All right. Welcome back to session number 4 of Experiencing the Power of DISC in Coaching. As I mentioned to you guys in the email that went out, I've been asked to do some discussion about using DISC in group forms. I'm not really part of the class here because this is kind of intro class, but when class comes to an end tonight, if you want to hang around for a few minutes, I'll talk about that for a couple of minutes with you guys so you can hopefully think about how to do some group work, because it's DISC is a really powerful tool for groups. So, any burning questions that we can answer for you before we get into our review of the S's and C's and tonight's lesson? All right, so let's review the S's. They were, of course, reserved at the bottom part of the chart. They're people-oriented, lower right-hand corner. They are friendly people. They're sincere. They're nice. Just want to get along. Salt of the earth. They tend to be natural followers, where the D and I's tend to be natural leaders. They are team players. They enjoy being on the team, not necessarily leading the team. They tend to hide or mask their emotions. They tend to internalize those things. They can be overly passive and non-action-oriented. We talk a little bit about what it's like to coach the high S and how you go about coaching them. We said that with a high S, you have to make sure you ask good questions like, you know, what's the opportunity here? How does that make you feel? Get them into action. What are you going to do about this? When can you do it? You're going to want to be the accountability partner for the high S, because on their own, they're prone to think about things a lot, but not necessarily do things a lot. So, questions about the high S. So the high C, we talk about the fact that they are reserved, again, that bottom part of the chart. They're task-oriented, so they're the lower left-hand corner. They tend to like detail. They tend to want to be correct, so they're accurate. They're analytical. They want to get the details. They have very high attention to detail. So they will check and double-check and triple-check things. They have a natural fear of being wrong. This gets in their way quite a bit when they're trying to, you know, move forward with relationships, especially because they don't want to admit when they might have made a mistake. And that's a challenge for them. They tend to overuse their detail orientation, their precision. They are so focused on being accurate and being right that they may totally miss, the emotions in a situation or with a person. When you're going to coach the high C, focus on what's realistic. Focus on getting them to make a decision. And as a narrow down, what else do you need to know to make a decision? I had a client a couple of years ago I worked with who was actually starting a massage business, actually. And she was trying to get, she said, you know, I've had three other coaches. Nobody can help me. You tell me you're good. You help me. And I said, well, let's see what we can do. So the first thing she told me about things she had to get done before she get open. Meanwhile, she's going broke from the expense and no bringing in the income. I got to get my website up correctly. I've got to get the location exactly right. I haven't got the right materials inside to make it look the way I want it to look. I haven't got the right radio. I've got all these things. These things weren't yet perfect. She said, and it's got to be perfect before I dare open the doors. She said, I got to be perfect too. I said, well, that's really great. Do you have a target date for that? A target date for what? The day you're going to be perfect. That was a huge aha, because she paused and said, oh, will that be perfect? Will I? Nope. No, it can be perfect. So what's going to be good enough here? So get a client to see a client think in terms of what's going to be good enough? What can I really accept to move forward? All right. Questions on the C. All right, so you're ready for the quiz then, right?
Sure.
All right, so here's the quiz. Which statement likely came from a high S? It's party time. Damn the torpedoes, full speed ahead. The square root of 923 is 30.3809. Can I help you with those bags?
Can I help you with those bags?
Yeah.
It's a pretty easy one, the outcase, wasn't it? Yeah, the high S, they're friendly, they're helpful, they're courteous, so they want to help you carry your bags. Of course they will. All right. So let's try the animal thing now. Which animal is most like a high S? You have to explain your answer in this case. A mountain lion. An ostrich. A Tasmanian devil. Or a rabid dog. Do, 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 do,
the ostrich.
The ostrich.
The ostrich.
And why the ostrich?
They're hiding their emotions.
There you go. When they get fearful, they hide their head in the sand. And that's very much like the high S. They're going to avoid confrontation, and they will literally run away and hide from it. If not literally run away, they'll do everything they can to avoid confrontation, because it really makes them very, very uncomfortable. All right, let's try the high C. Which statement came from a high C? Attack. Or, practice makes perfect. You're my best friend. Or, we, look at me.
Practice makes perfect.
Yeah. Because the high C wants things to be perfect, right?
Correct.
Last, okay, so now we have, here we go, this is toughy, the high C animal. A bull. A grizzly bear. A swallow from Capistrano. Or a peacock. A little more challenging, huh?
What was the second one?
A grizzly bear. A bull, a grizzly bear, a swallow from Capistrano, or a peacock?
I don't know what a peacock is.
Above.
Wow.
probably the swallow.
And why do you think it's a swallow?
It might be something to do with nest building, or to be correct. And so, but from Capistrano, don't know that type of swallow. So the others just don't seem to fit. Help me out, folks.
They don't seem to fit.
I agree. What about the grizzly bear? If the grizzly bear is precise in preparing for hibernation and has to go through meticulously to make sure he's ready for the hibernation season.
That's an interesting answer. So no one here knows about Capistrano?
No.
Oh, sorry.
Nobody's Googling?
The swallows return to Capistrano on the very same day every year.
Uh-huh.
They travel away when the winter comes. They come back in the spring. It's on the very same day. No one knows why they do this. They don't have a calendar, they don't think, but every day they come back at exactly, precisely the same day.
Oh,
that's just sleep.
Googled it. Absolutely.
<You see.
laughs> It's all over Google, and we didn't
it's
even...
all over Google. There we go.
Oh, my goodness.
All right. So let's get into the meat. Actually, take one step back. These seem like funny little quizzes, I know that. But especially the thing about things they say, you'll be able to tell people's disc style eventually just by listening to the words that they use and how they use them. And it'll become clear to you, especially with certain styles, which people are which style. So sometimes it helps, if you will, just to close your eyes and listen to people. Listen to the patterns that they use. D's and I's tend to talk more quickly and more loudly.
Mm-hmm.
S's and C's tend to talk softer and less talk from the S's and C's until you get a C into an explanation, in which case they may go on for 10 minutes about an explanation. But up front, they're going to be more reserved and more quiet. And D's tend to use action-oriented words. I's tend to use words that express a high level of exuberance. Things are wonderful. It's outstanding. How was the cake? It was the best I've ever had, you know. S's tend to talk in terms of not themselves, but about people around them, the important things around them. They're going to be softer and quieter. The C's tend to be much more precise in everything that they do. So listen to the words people use. You'll get a good feel for their natural style. Now, moving right along here. Tonight's discussion is the first of two on style combinations. And I say it's first of two because this is really, really important stuff. And if you can do this properly, if you can learn how to use the style combinations the right way, you'll find that you have a very good chance of making your clients effective because you'll be able to relate back to the things that they do, put it back to the disc profile, and get them to move forward. Okay? So let's start our discussion here tonight by looking at the chart, the disc graphic chart, and talk about how these things play together. Now, most people are going to be a combination from more than one style. Now, it's not always going to be true. There's some people out there who are pure styles, but the vast majority are going to be a combination. And you should expect to identify that combination and work with it in order to understand exactly what it is that this person is really all about. Okay? And the combinations may not always seem what I'm going to call logical to you. And what I mean by that is that you'll find that in some cases, opposite combinations do exist. You'll see a person, you'll meet a person who has a profile that is both D and S. Or you'll find a person who's got that I matched with a C. And there's nothing wrong with that at all. But actually, it's a good thing. But they sometimes get confused in this when they're first doing it, when they see their primary style only and don't understand the importance of the secondary style. Okay? So how do you find out a person's primary and secondary style? In some cases also, by the way, a tertiary style. So referring to here, in terms of primary and secondary styles, are those points plotted above midpoint. So take out your disc profile and turn to page 3. And you'll see there on page 3, graph 3. And look at your profile and look at what the highest point is on that graph. That's your primary style. By itself, it does not define you, but it's part of what defines you and who you are. If you've got a second point above midpoint, the next highest point is your secondary style. If you don't have anything else above midpoint, that blue area and shaded in the middle is the midpoint, then you're a pure style. So the highest point above midpoint is your primary. Second highest point above midpoint is a secondary. And if there's a third one exists, that'll be your tertiary style. And these things combine to really create the true profile of who you are. We always start with basics, even with our clients, D-I-S-C. But to really be effective with DISC, you need to understand the importance of that second point above midpoint and what it really means. Okay? So if you ignore the person, if you don't understand a person's primary style and know only their secondary style and only deal with the primary, you can dig yourself quite a hole in terms of communicating with that person. Let me give you an example of this. A couple years ago, a friend of mine called me. She's from Arizona. She's also a DISC practitioner. She said, "Dave, I got this great idea. I want to run it by you." Okay, what's the idea? And she laid out the idea for a workshop she wanted to work on with me. And it was a new idea. I thought, wow, that's fascinating. I never thought of that before. And so my combination of styles is a D and a C. So the way that happens with works with me is that in normal mode, my D is the highest, and I have D tendencies. Active, quick decision maker, move forward, what's next. When I'm not comfortable with the topic at hand, my C takes over, and I tend to ask a lot of questions. So this stuff was very new to me, and I asked a bunch of questions. How would this work? What do we do about this? How would it all play together? And we talked about half an hour with my asking lots of questions. And she said, okay. She said, well, this has been a good discussion. Tell you what, think about this a little bit. I'll call you back same time next week. We'll see how we want to move forward. All right, good. So I hung up the phone. I gave more thought to it. I reached a conclusion, at which point I went from being a C again to the high D took over again. A week later, she calls me. She's a DISC practitioner. She heard all my questions. She assumed I was in high C mode. She began to go to me very slowly and methodically all the points about this workshop. And as she was doing this, it just, frankly, it was annoying me. And I finally had to stop her and say, Sue, stop it. You're talking to my C. Talk to my D. My C, because my D is very bored right now. She goes, you're a combination? Well, yeah, I am. And we got to get past the detail. We got to get to the action part here, or I'm going to get really bored. She goes, oh, I'm sorry. I didn't realize that. And this was from a DISC practitioner.
Wow.
Yeah. So, and frankly, if I had known her so well, because I really didn't know her well, I might have gone to her, hey, you know what, this is great, but I don't think so. Because it was, frankly, it was grating against me, because she was going so slow and so methodical through things that we'd already been through, and I was going, yep, got that, okay, yep, okay, let's move on, okay. She kept going slow. So pay attention to both the primary and secondary styles. Now, what you're going to discover here as you go through these is that in some cases it's very clear how the primary and secondary styles create the third style, the style combination. But in some cases it's not going to be not nearly as clear. Now, there are about 15 patterns we're going to go through here together as we do this. I say some will be very obvious to you. Some are going to sit there and say, wow, I wouldn't have guessed these two create that kind of behavior. That's what's important, not to try and just say, okay, automatically, they're two together, therefore they'll behave like this. But until you really know them and study them, use the text in your workbook and your DISC profile to fully understand the patterns. Okay? So, questions so far?
Is that always true, Dave, that you have a dominant style that you use when you're comfortable, and the secondary, if you have a secondary above midline, that is when you're uncomfortable or you need more detail? Or I don't understand when the secondary comes in exactly.
It's going to vary by pattern.
Oh, okay.
And as it is, the D and the C are really pretty clear how they play together.
Okay.
And some it's not so clear.
Right.
As we go through them here together, you're going to start to see how they play together a little bit. It's a good question, but it's not always a matter of uncomfortable is the high one, uncomfortable is the second one. That's just not always going to be true.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So there are a number of patterns here. And let's start with patterns that the high D is preeminent. And there are three of those. There's the creative, which is the D and the C together. Now, that's the pattern that I am. I think creative is a very nice word for it. Some people say other things about the D and C pattern. That are quite as nice as creative, because we tend to lack the people side of the equation. Therefore, we can be a rather abrupt, rather straightforward, a little too direct, a little too detail-oriented. So I think creative is a nice word. I like the word creative, which is the word most people usually call me. Now, a secondary pattern starts with a high D is the inspirational pattern. That's a D and an I combined. There's a third one called results-oriented, which is also a D and an I combined. So you got a DC, you got two DIs, but notice there's no DS. Because the way this plays out is the pattern that comes out with the S's and the D's is almost always going to have that S being preeminent and the D being secondary. Now, there are three patterns also that deal, I'm going to do the creative pattern next week, which is my pattern. But let's look for a minute here at the inspirational pattern. So in your personal disc profile, if you go back to about page 15, you'll start seeing what they call the classical patterns. Now, they're in alphabetical order. So the inspirational pattern, for example, is right there on page 18 at the top. See how the D and the I are very close together? Notice how low that S is. Likewise, the C is very low. Now, we're going to cover how to create these patterns, by the way, yourselves, for your own disc profiles, in session 6. So we'll get to all those, that kind of detail. But I want you to look at this and look at the emotions of the inspirational high D, high I. Accepts aggression. Really? A high D is going to accept aggression? Wow. Downplays need for affection. A high I downplays need for affection? That's really unusual. But when the D and I combine, that's what tends to come out of there. But notice how they influence others. Charm. Most folks never refer to high Ds as being charming. Just doesn't happen that often. That charm, if you will, comes from the high I.
Wow.
Yeah. Intimidation comes clearly from the high D. Use of rewards, kind of a high I, not necessarily directly, definitely not a high D, but it's part of how they influence people around them. Under pressure becomes manipulative, quarrelsome, or belligerent. So you got a high I who's out there running around saying all the high I positive things, but under pressure, they get a little bit nasty if they're the DI inspirational pattern.
Wow.
Yeah. Would increase effectiveness with more genuine sensitivity. Well, that makes sense because eyes are sensitive, but it's not always genuine. These tend to not be sensitive. Willingness to help others succeed in their own personal development. Look at the right-hand side of that, the three paragraphs that I read. Look at the third paragraph. Inspirational persons can be charming in their interactions. They are persuasive when obtaining assistance for repetitive and time-consuming details because they don't want to do them because they're D's and I's, not S's and C's. People often experience a conflicting sensation by feeling drawn to inspirational people, yet being curiously distanced. So you see how the I and the D there play together. Others may feel used by inspirational persons' manipulation powers. So, isn't that an interesting pattern? Yeah. Now, it's even more fascinating when you scroll down and look at the other DI, which is the results-oriented profile, which is back on page, where'd it go? There it is. On page 21. Now notice here the D is still very high, but the I is a much lower. It's just above midpoint. Emotions. Verbalizes ego strength. Displays rugged individualism. Yeah, I get that from a high D. I get that. Influences others by force of their character and persistence. Well, now, wait a minute. Force of their character, I get. That's a high D. But D's and I's both tend to get distracted easily. Persistence? Well, they combine, that turns into a persistence factor. Okay. Would increase effectiveness with more verbalization of their reasoning. So high I's not being very verbal? Huh. Consideration of the views of others, other views and ideas about goals and problem solving. Yeah, D's tend to forget that part, but I's would generally consider others. Genuine concern for others, patience, and humility. Now look at the right-hand paragraphs. Look at the top paragraph. Results-oriented people display self-confidence. Good. Which some may interpret as arrogance. Oops. Didn't plan on that. They actively seek opportunities that test and develop their abilities to accomplish results. So look high D there. Results-oriented persons like difficult tasks, competitive situations, unique assignments, and important positions. So, here you have two DI patterns that are quite frankly very, very different. Okay? Now, I was going to move on here to the next set of patterns, but are there questions so far?
So, Dave, it's Sandy. I'm higher I than D, but they're close together, and I'm considered inspirational. So I have a 7 score and a 6 score, but very low S and C. So even though it's reversed than what it shows on that graph, it still called me inspirational. So is that just because they're close together?
It's because of where they fall. And we do this together in session number 6. You get a feel for how those things really work.
Okay. All right.
But yeah, so they might not always be exactly that order, but they're in that same range that ties them together that way.
Gotcha. Okay. Okay.
Okay. But you'll notice, you'll see in a minute here, there is a pattern that's a high I secondary D that you didn't fall into.
Mm-hmm. I noticed.
Yeah. Other questions? Okay, so there are three high I patterns. There's an I with a secondary C, good, a high with a secondary S, and a high with a secondary D. So in this case, they've got all the patterns covered. Okay, so let's look at the appraiser pattern. And that's important because that's one of those things with the opposites, the I and the C together. Look at the emotion, driven to look good. Influences others by competitive recognition. Under pressure becomes restless, critical, and impatient. Increase effectiveness with more individual follow-through, empathy when showing disapproval, and a steadier pace. Look in that right-hand box, the paragraphs. Look at the third paragraph again. Appraisers are good, critical thinkers. All right. They are verbal in their criticisms, and their words occasionally may be caustic. Appraisers have better control of the situation if they relax and pace themselves. How the axiom to achieve this is, you win some and you lose some. The opposite patterns, the high I, outgoing, people-oriented, the high C, thoughtful and reserved and task-oriented, and they combine to create this particular style. Now, what's fascinating here is that when people have this pattern, the reaction is, oh, thank God. I thought I was weird. Now I see this as some semblance of normal. Yeah, it is. In themselves, they seem a tendency to be on the opposite side of certain things. And in some cases, they really feel like they're all alone in the world. You show them it's a pattern that happens to other people, it happens pretty routinely, they actually start to feel better about who they really are.
Wow.
Yeah. That's the opposites. And then scroll on down to the other figure. Sorry? Question? Scroll down to the persuader pattern, which is on page 20. Now, this is the one, this is the I with a secondary D. And look at the emotions. Trusts others. The high D, really? Is enthusiastic. Well, that comes from the high I, obviously. Influences others by friendly, open manner. That's a high I. Level of deftness. That's likely a high I also. So you see the strong role the high I plays here in the persuader pattern. But notice, under pressure, becomes indecisive. Wow. That's unusual, because both these and I's are quick decision makers. But here it is, they become indecisive and are easily persuaded. Becomes organized to look good. That sounds more like a C than a D and an I. Look at that paragraph on the right hand again. Look at that third section down there, the third paragraph of that section. While persuaders desire freedom from routine and regimentation, that's both the D and the I, they do need to achieve analytical data on a systematic basis. Really? That doesn't sound like a D or an I. Once alert to the importance of the little things, persuaders can use information to balance their enthusiasm the realistic assessment of the situation. So in some ways, that I for the secondary C, or secondary D, is showing a lot of C tendencies. So do you kind of see now why I said you don't want to just sit there and say, well, if it's a D and I, they have these two things combined and it plays together? Not always as simple as it seems. Questions on the patterns you've gone through so far? I'm going to save the counselor for our session next Tuesday. So that's the appraiser and the persuader. All right, the S patterns. Now notice here in the S's, there is an S with a D, an S with an I, and an S with a D and a C, but not a plain old S with a C. So these patterns get really fascinating. Let's look at the agent pattern, which is the S and the I combined. So that would be pretty easy, right? Because, I mean, they're both people-oriented. This should be fairly straightforward. Okay. Emotions, accepts affection. All right. Rejects aggression. Well, that makes sense. That's kind of the I and the S together, right? Influences others by empathy and friendship. Well, you can see that the high S is playing a big role there in both empathy and friendship. That just makes sense. They overuse kindness. Under pressure, become persuasive, use information or key friendships if necessary. That sounds a little bit manipulative, doesn't it? Look at the paragraphs on the right. Look at the top paragraph. Agents are attentive to both the human relations and task aspects of their work situation. Okay, S and S and I combined, I get it. S's do tasks when they're assigned to them. Empathetic and supportive, they are good listeners and known for their willing ear. Sounds like an S, not so much like an I. Agents make people feel wanted and needed because they just respond to others' needs, people do not fear being rejected by agents. Does sound like a high S. Agents offer friendship and are willing to perform services for others. Okay, look at the third paragraph, the first couple sentences there. Agents fear conflict and dissension. There's your high S coming out. Their supportive approach may enable others to tolerate a situation rather than encouraging an act of problem solving. So again, they're going to tend to sit back, and the S is going to take dominance, if you will, and allow them to tolerate things that they shouldn't tolerate. And as you deal with them, you may be seeing a lot of the high I popping through and wonder, would they tolerate this stuff? And this is why. The high S is dominating this particular pattern. Look at the investigator, the other one there that's the SDC together. That is back on, where to go, page
18.
Yeah, there it is, page 18. Emotions. This is a high S with a D and a C, both secondary. Dispassionate. Demonstrates self-discipline. Okay. Well, I can see the S and the D kind of doing that, I guess, right? S and the C. Influence others by determination and tenacity. Well, that's the C coming through, maybe even the D. That certainly is not coming from the S part of the behavior. Overuse bluntness. A high S. Suspicion of others. High S? Wow. You see the D and the C playing their role there, even though they're secondary and tertiary. How they increase effectiveness? More flexibility. Normally, S's are very flexible, to the point where they're just easy to push around. Acceptance of others? Wow. Personal involvement with others. You can see here how those things play together to create a very unique person than someone who's just a high S. Look at the third paragraph on the right-hand side. Investigators are not especially interested in pleasing people. Really? A high S? And prefer to work alone.
Wow.
To be perceived as cold, blunt, and tactless. Because they value their own thinking ability, investigators evaluate others by how they use facts and logic. Don't see the high S coming through there too much, do you? So, why is this important? Give us a good example of it. Tell somebody, yeah, I took the disc profile. I'm a high S. Really? Let's talk about your stuff. If they talk about their high S, their highest style, which is what a lot of people do, instead of the entire pattern, you're going to get a very different behavioral style than if you knew what the pattern really was. So you can't rely on just that first letter. That dumb letter is great, glad to have it, love it. It's not the only thing that makes up their behavioral style. Now, you can get a good picture from this of why some people take a DISC profile and say, we took our profiles and I know what our styles are. People have labels on their shirts that say D, I, S, and C, but something's still wrong here. We're not working together very well. Yeah. Treat them all like peers, like peer styles, and they're not. They're the pattern. Now, under the C area, you'll see there's a perfectionist, which is a C, secondary S. But again, there's not an S, secondary C. And a perfectionist, I'm sorry, the practitioner, which is the C, I, and S together. Notice there's not a C, D. And the CIS practitioner is one that's particularly fascinating. We're going to cover a lot more depth in our next session. So let's pause for a minute here and talk about your general impressions about these patterns and what they mean, what you've learned from the introduction of those patterns here.
So, Dave, is there a percentage of people that fall in particular patterns?
Yeah, I'm sure there is. I've never seen it published.
Okay.
While I've seen the DISC things published in different surveys, different ways, I've never seen the patterns published.
Because some of them are scary.
Yeah, aren't they? Unless if you sit there and say, I got your primary style, therefore I know who you are. Ooh, you just scared me. Wait a minute. There's something going on here. Now, the different companies that create the DISC profiles all have different terms around these things. Because the language here is unique to Inscape, calling these things what they call them, but the concepts are the same in fundamentally all the profiles. Now, I say that, but there's a caveat, if you will. There are a few of them out there who call themselves DISC, but don't focus on the combinations at all. And don't even show you all three graphs. In fact, some only show you one graph and say, that's it. That's all that really matters. Now, my experience tells me that these things are really quite important, and I've studied this quite a bit. Those companies that sit there and say, you only need two graphs, or you only need one graph, in my mind, they're missing the boat. And before I actually started with a different company learning discs. I started with some TTI stuff and learned their stuff. Heard some stuff from another company as well whose name I won't mention. Then I ended up at Inscape. And these are the ones where they have the best research. And what I see the verbiage here matching, especially as they define it in their material, clearly matches the patterns most often. And that's why I've used Inscape Publishing. Now, by the way, they've been bought out by Wiley & Sons, so you'll hear them called Inscape, you'll hear them called Wiley. It's the same company. It was a recent purchase, I think, in the last 12 months. Other comments or questions on these, on the classical patterns, that what you've learned from looking at these things together?
Dave, it's Ron here. I think that makes the coaching of people much more complex and difficult. Therefore, the thought that crosses my mind is this must require quite a long time invested in using this tool to become familiar with all these and use them effectively in coaching. Is that a fair statement?
Not entirely, Ron. If you try and do it from personal observation only, and you get them out of order, then you have a problem. If I take a disc profile, you have a chance to look at this document for them, and let them read about their style, then it's much easier to do. It also helps explain some of the complexities of the personality and the concept that people sit there and say, I don't want to be put into a box. Okay, we're not putting you in a DSE box. There's a different pattern here that you're going to fit into. So we try and do it without a net, if you will. It's much more challenging. Use the tools that are available to you here through the profiles, then it's not really all that hard, as long as you're aware of it and truly understand the behavioral style.
Okay, so then later on you handle this from a group perspective. I'd really appreciate it if you'd spend a bit of time when you have a complex range of people in a group who have this sub-pattern or classical pattern, if you like, and how you'd manage that. If you could talk to that perhaps later on, I'd really appreciate that. Thanks, Dave.
Sure, I'd be happy to do that. If I forget, by the way, remind me. Other comments about what we've seen on the pattern so far? So I hope you all see now why I emphasize so much the idea that we're working with patterns here and not just DIS and C, how this separates, if you will, the professional disc people from the amateurs. Okay. Now, there are three other patterns I want to talk about here. They're called the irregular patterns. This one's called the overshift. All four points are at or above midline. And that does happen. It's not what I would tell you, it's not a valid graph. Some people might sit there and say, well, that means I'm pretty good in all four areas, isn't it? Yeah, it doesn't mean that at all. Actually, what it means is that there's something wrong. Most likely, it was your mental place where you were when you took the profile, or you tried to fool it somehow. But just being all there together, midpoint, is not a sign that you're good in all four areas. Likewise, the undershift, all four below or at midpoint. Again, they fall below versus falling above. Most often when you have too many answers that fit to the called the none of the above category. What happens is that as you take the profile, the words you're choosing are associated with D, I, S, C, or none of the above. And if you choose too many words that fit the category of none of the above, you tend to get this this undershift pattern. And the tight pattern, similar, but all four points are right around, some above, some below, some in the middle, right there together. So all of these are considered irregular patterns. Now, I see this a lot, by the way. When I work with the businesses, and they want to either, usually with people that have brought on board, they've hired them, and they've been there for 2 weeks, and they give them a DISC profile. So 2 weeks into your job, you're still pretty confused, not sure where you fit. And as you answer the give the responses here, you tend to follow these kind of patterns. So I always tell my clients who want to use this with their, in their business, it's a pre-hire tool before you hire them. It works pretty well there. It gives you good information. I wouldn't use it only as the only tool you have for hiring, but it's good help. But immediately after they've been hired, for about 3 months, don't even bother. You're just wasting your money.
Say that again, Dave.
If they've been in a new job for under about 3 months,
okay,
don't bother with a profile. You'll be able to get one of these three irregular patterns, and it won't be valid.
Okay.
Doesn't mean that they're wrong. Doesn't mean they're screwed up. Just means right then they weren't in the right place to take the profile. They also may have been very troubled that day by something happened in their life that was deeply upsetting to them. Could also cause them to be indecisive if we create one of these patterns. So don't try to interpret them. Just say, you know what? The pattern's invalid. Does not happen a lot, but it does happen. All right. Questions about the irregular patterns? All right, general questions.
Well, you mentioned...
Yes.
Sorry, you mentioned, this is Sandy, you mentioned somebody talking about using it for hiring purposes. So,
right.
My question is around the purpose of doing that. Is it to predict their behavior in the work environment, to look for a fit in a team? Like, just curious.
It's really designed to help you see if they're to understand their behavior. Most folks, I'll emphasize the word most, do an interview on their very best behavior, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And this helps identify their natural pattern. You can see, aha, the job I have here is an accountant job. They're a high DI. Geez, you know, I don't want to retire just on this alone, but they lack attention to detail. As an accountant, I want attention to detail. So it would never be the only tool you use in hiring, but it's one that you can use as a way to help get a better feel and give you a way to ask questions.
Dave, can this tool, or is it commonly also used in career selection? Have you seen that much?
In general terms, yes, because, again, you focus on things like, well, you're very outgoing, therefore these kind of things might appeal to you. I think I used a strong interest inventory a while back, and I saw some correlation between the skills and things in there and the behaviors in there and some of the DISC material. In reality, so it can be used as a guide to help you identify some things. I wouldn't overly rely on it that way.
Okay, so there isn't a separate report in that line because I know the strong. I use that too.
Yeah, I've used strong, and there's not a separate DISC report that says, here are the jobs you ought to be applying for. Okay? Other questions?
Thank you.
All right. So this is officially the end of class. If you want to hear something about using DISC with groups, feel free to hang around. If you have something else to do, feel free to hang up, and we'll talk to you next Tuesday.
Next Tuesday.
All right. Let's talk about DISC with groups. And DISC is a marvelous tool to use with groups because you do tend to get a chance to have interaction between different styles, and that helps reinforce the things that are going on. But also, and quite frankly, using it in groups is a way to make a lot of money because you get paid a lot more. You get paid $5,000-$6,000 for a group workshop with 20 or 30 people in it versus, you know, a coaching session for a couple $100. And oftentimes a DISC workshop can lead to one-on-one clients. People sit there and say, I have the profile. I see what I have to do here. Help me get it done. So I'm a big fan of workshops. And the nice thing about them also is the fact that you're going to use them to help build upon each other by hopefully doing a series of workshops, not just one or two. So there's some key things I would like to keep in mind about workshops. And one is that it works best, workshops work best, especially with DISC, in a discovery mode. So what I mean by that is have people take the profile in advance, but don't give them the results. As you get them together in the room, talk about the different behavioral styles, things that can cause behavioral styles, and have them basically self-select what they think their style is. And then as you've done that, and they tell you why they think they're a certain style, you give them the DISC report then and see if they were right or not. And after reading it, okay, so after you've read it, what changes here? What do you think the difference between what you said and what the report says? Now, oftentimes the report's going to match what they self-selected, and that's good. But just occasionally it doesn't. Let them talk about why they think the report is right or why they think they're right. The report here is really quite good, but I never would try and use it to convince someone that, no, the computer's right and you're wrong. Use it only as a guide. Size of groups. Small groups, 8 to 10, you can do them. They tend to be less interactive because it's unlikely that in a group of 8 to 10 people you're going to have a D and I, or have at least more than one D, I, S, and C. So 20 to 30 or 35 is a great size for a group. And what you're going to try and do is as you analyze the different behavioral styles, have them break out into their primary style and talk about what that style means and why it's valuable. If you only have one person there who's an S, one person there who's a D, you're going to feel a little bit picked on. So you're going to have a big enough group there possibly to have at least two or three people in each of the four quadrants. Now, I just talked to her all today about the fact that people are not just a DIS and C. Then I say, give them the four quadrants. You've got to start with the basics. If you try and start with the combinations, you'll lose them. So in the workshops that we do, we start with the basics. And that's about, we do about 4 hours on the basics. What you are, why you are, how to recognize what others are, and how to modify behaviors based on who you're talking to. you get into the more advanced sections, if you will, the second or third session, then you start showing the patterns, what the patterns mean. And that's what's going to help you then get past the initial, well, I'm a high D, but I'm really a nice person, and I don't think that this really described me very well. Ah, okay. What matched up with your high D? Here's your classical pattern. Now how do you feel about it? Oh, now I see it much more clearly. I tend to start with basic communication, just as a communication tool. So, how should a high D talk to a high S? What's the high D saying? What's the high S hearing? What if the high S or high I talks to the high C? What's the high I saying? What's the high C hearing? So communication is an easy place to start. But it works quite well for teamwork, conflict resolution, any kind of discussion around brainstorming and how people can react together. So you can build a series of workshops around DISC. To say you can build them or buy them, actually. That can go on for quite some time. You can talk about, for example, about how the four natural styles manage their time. How the four natural styles make decisions. And you can go on and on this way. Yeah, I actually one time put together a series of 10 courses around DISC that I refer to as Management 101 and walk through the basics of how they give feedback, how they manage their time, how they communicate, different aspects of DISC and how you can use it that way. Very important that you make it highly interactive and avoid the temptation with that kind of a group of people in the room to lecture. Let them do star discovery. You guys ever play with the Hanoi Tower? It's a tool I use in workshops sometimes. It's a very simple thing. It's five pieces of wood of varying lengths. You stack them with the biggest one on bottom, second biggest one, third, fourth, fifth. So it's like a little tower. And you give them an assignment. Your assignment is to take this tower, move from spot A to spot C. Spot B is the intermediate point. Here are the rules. You can only move one piece at a time. You can never stack a bigger piece on top of a smaller piece. I like to do this in groups, actually, small groups. All right. Yeah, you guys want to take a few minutes to try this out? We'll come back and give it a try. And what you'll see is that high D behavioral styles sit there and say, I don't need 10 minutes. I'll just do it right now. And they'll go up and try and do it. And, of course, they'll fail badly normally because it's not all that easy. Meanwhile, you'll see the eyes are really just sitting there watching them and laughing at them, but doing no better. The S's are among themselves trying to figure out how to do it by watching others and taking notes. And the C's are down there drawing flow charts. And you put them in groups by the natural style, you'll watch that pattern. If you put them in groups where you mix the styles intentionally, you'll see how they deal with conflict, how they communicate. So there are a lot of games like that you can use that work quite well for understanding the behavioral styles. Sorry, go ahead. Question?
What game did you call that?
It's called the Hanoi Tower.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
Yeah. there's a book out there that I got years ago called Games Trainers Play. And it's designed to be games you do inside your inside a training class. And you can easily adapt a lot of those things for disc. And if you like that one, there's also, of course, there's more games trainers play. And I even saw even more games trainers play. You got a variety of things you can use that way to find the tools, to find tools to use in workshops. So that's kind of some rambling on workshops. What questions do you have that I can answer for you specifically? No questions? Really?
Dave,
yes.
if you're going through this process, what you're saying at this point is you're keeping it very basic, so you don't actually get into talking about the classical styles, or classic styles, rather.
Not in the first workshop. What you want to do is that in the more advanced workshops. And before you, and find out what the needs of the other organization are, what you really have to do is do the basic communication workshop first, then do a more advanced workshop to introduce classical styles, and then you want to do some things around conflict and et cetera, but telling them, keep in mind here, we're dealing with your primary style. If you're going to be a combination, that's how they're going to have to deal with the fact that even though they're all together in the corner, they're all eyes there together, they don't all think exactly alike. Yeah, some of you guys are the IS, some of you guys are the DI, that's why. So up front,
so have you run
Brian's,
work?
Sorry, go ahead.
Sorry, Dave.
Go ahead.
Sorry, all I was going to say was, I think there are a lot of organizations that I've run over that have actually had DISC presented or run for them, but I don't think very many of them actually get into the classic styles, and that's why I'm raising this, because I think a lot of organizations and a lot of folks that I have, leaders that I've met in organizations who had this done said, yeah, we've done that, but, we didn't really get out of it, and to me that focuses, I think, then going to the deeper level, and I'd be keen to know whether you've run workshops like that and what size they would be and how you'd go about that, whether you see a market for that.
Yeah, I admit what I like to do there. I do the DISC workshop, and if you do them the right way, they're very interactive people, a lot of fun. Get to the end and say, so would you guys all enjoy this? Oh, yeah, really kind of neat. All right. And by the way, when I do these kind of things, I also say, create an action plan now, what you're going to deal with, the person you hate the most in the room, that kind of thing. Then I tease them with, by the way, we've gone through four styles here. What if I told you there were 15 different styles? And then tease them with just a little bit of the classical patterns as a way to sit there and say, there's much more here. Goes much deeper. Let's go on to the next workshop. Does that help you?
Yes, I think you're addressing it from one perspective. What I'm saying is that people who have been through this,
right,
but have not reached any degree of understanding at a deeper level for this, and therefore have made statements to me, well, it didn't really help us in the difficulties we were encountering. What I was saying is I see that as then the opportunity to dig deeper into the classic styles, and that's why I was asking whether you've discovered that yourself and whether you've run workshops specifically saying, well, that's good if you guys have done that, but let me take you to the next level, which probably will help you to get the real value out of it. That's what I'm sort of asking. Have you found that happening?
Yeah, I've found it in a couple different ways, and one way I find it is through people who inquire about emotional intelligence that plays in there. But also when people say they've done it before and they didn't get much out of it, I asked them, okay, what was your style? Well, I was a high I. No. What's your style? Well, I was a high I. A high I what? And they go, what are you talking about? Well, did you only focus on the high I and not the pattern themselves? And they go, I don't know what you're talking about. Do you have your disc profile someplace? And I pull it out and say, so here's what's going on here. And you talk to this, we talk to somebody one-on-one. And this one you can sit there and tell them, so here's how the patterns play together. And if you only deal with a person's primary style, you're missing the boat. You're missing what's really important and deep here about dealing with disc. And once you convince one person that, the influence in the organization, then it's much easier. But you know, I start with asking them, so what is your style? And they just say, give me one letter. I'm sorry, that's not enough. What's your style? That's how I've done it. So, yeah, there is a need for it. I got called down to a place in Texas. It's been almost 10 years ago now, I think, when this happened. Because the guy who was there, the CEO, believed strongly in DISC. They brought a practitioner in to do DISC. They did a workshop. They did some one-on-one sessions. And they were screwed up beyond belief. And he called me because he heard I could fix this kind of stuff. And I went down there, and it all came down to two things, classical patterns and one particular VP who had misapplied the profile because of some personal biases that the computer didn't catch that I could because I was experienced at it. Is that a better job of answering your question for you, I hope?
Yeah, that's great. Thank you, Dave. Appreciate it.
If I'm off target, just let me know and I'll try again. Other questions? All right. Well, I hope you guys found this helpful.
Hey. This is Nancy.
Thank you.
Sorry, you have a question?
Yeah, I had a quick question. Earlier tonight you had said that we could develop our own workshops or we can purchase them. What did you mean by that?
Well, I mean, the first ones I did, I created on my own, which was really quite entertaining, to tell you the truth. I used to use the word dominant for the high D. So I looked at some pictures and I Googled images of dominant. Yeah, that was a mistake. A lot of women in black leather, so I got pictures back of, which I wasn't expecting. So I created my own, and they tended to be a lot of lecture. You can buy some of these things now from different places. Some come with complete scripts. The ones I use from Inscape, I mean, they give you all the PowerPoint slides, all the handouts. They give you a script to use. And in some cases, you can either do video, which gets more expensive, obviously, or you can do role plays, which is what I tend to do. So that way you don't have to worry about making your own because some people are very creative this way and do great. Some people go like, yeah, I'd rather buy something than just use somebody else's.
So either
way, you can do it.
So will you go through some of that in the last session about using DISC, like actually delivering DISC?
In the group format?
Yeah, just wondering about, you just mentioned about purchasing. We just basically would approach Inscape for purchasing workshops. Is that what you're saying, or will there be any more discussion around what we do next?
Well, there are discussion around session six around how you use DISC, but this, I mean, again, this class is based toward one-on-one stuff.
Right, okay.
So I don't mean to cut off that way, but I guess what I want to say is that, so it's not really part of the curriculum.
Mm-hmm.
To buy things directly from DISC, you have to either be a distributor, or what they call a sub-account.
Okay.
You know what? Okay, I take that back. That's not entirely true. You have to either be a distributor or have someone who's a distributor sell the stuff to you. Because you can buy it. You can quote buy it at retail, but not directly from Inscape, because they won't sell to you directly. They'll sell you if you're a distributor, or you can buy from a distributor, have it shipped to you.
Okay.
And if you want more information about that individually, let me know and I'll fill you in. I don't want to bore the whole class because, I mean, this is not, I don't intend this to be a set. So if you have questions, just let me know and I'll be happy to answer them for you.
Sure. Thank you.
Okay.
Yeah, thanks. Good night.
All right. All right, bye.
Thank
talk
you.
To you guys next Tuesday.
Thank
great.
You, Dave.
Thanks.
All righty.
Thanks,
Dave.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.